This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I hope it will take us one step closer to understanding what happened to Damien Hurd and who, if anyone, is responsible. From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd, Episode 7, The Timeline. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Thanks for listening. What's most incredible to me about the Damien Hurd case is just how much information is out there, and yet how little we still know for certain about Damien's night. The police conducted dozens of interviews with witnesses in Damien's case.
All right, it's 11:08 on Wednesday, the 9th of April.
This is Detective Cowan. It is about 4:36 p.m. on the 6th of May, 2014.
Chris Danos, Kennesaw Police Department, 4:33 p.m., Wednesday, the 18th of June.
It is the 10th of July, 2014, at about 1:34 p.m.
The volume of information in the 187-page police report is considerable, and because witness interviews were conducted months apart, it isn't always immediately clear how the puzzle pieces fit together.
We really would like to figure out what happened that night and so forth.
And I'm sorry that I was a crazy loud person that night.
And just when you think you know the order of events, a new wrinkle shows up.
Anybody else say anything to you about he got crazy again and they had to, I'm not saying beat him down or anything, but restrain him, maybe is a better word.
The biggest challenge in telling Damien's story is piecing together a timeline from the memories of college students at a party. Thankfully, we also have cell phone records, surveillance video, and bank transactions to guide us. It's going to take all of those resources combined to make sense of Damien's final days on Earth and the ones that followed.
It was a Saturday night in Gunnison, so, there's so many stories.
With the benefit of hindsight and a treasure trove of evidence, we know the following key events took place before the wrestler's party on Saturday, March 29th, 2014. Damien used his debit card to withdraw $100 cash from an ATM in Gunnison. He drove a group of wrestling teammates to the Crab Feed fundraiser in his Saturn SUV. He returned to the dorm, showered, and left on his longboard for the wrestler's party. Along the way, he stopped at Mountaineer Village apartment complex to buy $25 worth of acid from Curtis Markham, another Western student, at 6 p.m. He arrives at the wrestler's house shortly afterwards, but doesn't stay long. He returns to Curtis Markham's apartment around 7 p.m. to buy $25 more worth of acid. By 8 p.m., Damien is back at the wrestler's house, socializing with an ever-increasing number of people who arrive at the party. One of those people was Western student Lauren Dolliff.
Was it a fun party?
Yeah, it was fun. It was a little overwhelming at first.
What about it was overwhelming?
A lot of people.
Saturday was the night of the annual fundraiser for all Western State Athletics, the Crab Feed, and all scholarship athletes were involved in some form or fashion with the event. So when it was over, it was time to party. We know from Damien's conversation with his dad that the wrestlers were using the leftover beer from the fundraiser for their party. So that likely means Damien's remaining cash didn't go towards alcohol. This is important because somehow every last dollar in Damien's wallet was gone by the time his body was found. Damien's friend and teammate, Devin Zavala, remembered Damien being careful with his finances.
He's usually really protective around his money. I know that. He knows how much money he needs and wants and has in order to pay his tuition bill off.
We know Damien took out $100 from an ATM on Saturday, but only $50 of cash expenses are accounted for. The empty wallet is one of those details that, in my mind, points to foul play. So far, I haven't found any evidence that he blew the rest of the cash before he died. The seminal event at Saturday night's party at the wrestler's house was Damian's fight with Anthony Rios, a member of the track team. Unfortunately, police didn't record their interview with Anthony. I tried contacting him multiple times in 2020, but never got a response. At 10:49 p.m., Damian texted Anthony the address of the wrestler's house with the words, "If you down." 2 minutes later, Anthony responds, "I'm coming." Gunnison, Colorado is an extremely small town. It covers just 4.16 square miles. With the close proximity in mind, we know the fight took place around 11 p.m., and based on an eyewitness account, it doesn't last long.
That kid walks in the door, and Damian grabs him by the collar and brings him outside.
This is Dylan Weinchant. He called police the day Damian's body was found to report what he'd seen.
The kid that Damian basically jumped was on the, like, track team. Okay. And the friend that I was with was one of the track team captains, and he broke up that fight.
On April 2nd, Dylan tells police that someone from the track team broke up the fight with Damian at the wrestler's party, but it would take another month before that person was identified. This is from a May 7th interview with Tyler Gates, a member of the cross-country team.
Do you know anybody from your team that was at the wrestling party?
I know the kid who was involved in, like, the fight, I guess, and I want to say Sam Vandeveld. I think he was the one who pulled Damian off Anthony.
There's a parallel here. The two freshman athletes in the fight are each taken away by their team captains, Sam Vandeveld for the cross-country team and Kyle Pyatt for the wrestling team. While police interviewed Kyle Pyatt multiple times during their investigation, as far as I can tell, Sam Vandeveld was not contacted by authorities, and he was never interviewed at all. I tried to reach out to him in 2020, but never got a response. Sam, if you're listening to this podcast, I'd like to hear from you. After the fight between Damian and Anthony, we know there's a confrontation between Damian and members of the wrestling team around midnight. This is Kyle Pyatt's first recorded interview with police at 1 p.m. on April 2nd, 2014.
Kind of got in his face and we kind of got into it, but...
What time was that?
It was about... Honestly, I don't really know, and I don't want to give you... It was pretty late. I'd say after 12.
Okay.
Even though Kyle is less than confident about the timing of his confrontation with Damian being around midnight, that's actually confirmed by Morgan Lambert and Elliot Copeland. They both told Gunnison police that they saw Damian and Kyle argue around midnight, and the fight ended with Damian going back into Andrew Morris's bedroom. The next time we know for sure what Damian was doing is based on his cell phone activity. At 12:36 a.m., Damian texts Western student Tori Boyle, "Come over." She initially declines the invitation, but they continue to text for 20 minutes before Damian's cell phone history ends abruptly. The last contact on his phone appears to be a blank text message sent from Tori at 12:59 a.m. According to Tori's interview with Detective Chris Danos, she did go over to the wrestler's house in the early morning hours of Sunday, March 30th.
And it was my understanding you got over there around 1:15 a.m.?
Yeah.
And Damian was in ammo,
Andrew
Morris's bedroom by himself, under a blanket on the floor.
Yeah, he seemed fine. I mean, he smiled. He was just having casual conversation.
All of this tracks with what other students said about Damian's activities after both the fight with Anthony Rios and the ensuing confrontation with members of the wrestling team. At 1 a.m., Damian was alive and well. A bit sleepy, yes, but seemingly far from suicidal.
The talk was probably maybe, like, at the most 7 minutes.
Okay.
It was quick. When we were done, he just rolled over and put the blanket back over his head and we left.
According to Lacey Miller, around this same time, Damian was also messaging her, asking if she wanted to meet up at his dorm room.
Around 1:15, 1:20-ish, and he said he asked me to come over to his dorm.
Damien's friend, Bryce Bassinger, knew that Damien often used different texting apps depending on what girl he was talking to.
But he'd be like, all right, I talked to this girl on this app and this one on this other app, so I can turn off the notifications if I go hang out. So he would space out what Messenger or Snapchat, whatever way they typically communicated, because, you know, nowadays people don't communicate all through just phone call.
Around 1:30 a.m., Lacey Miller says she tried to finalize her plans with Damien the old-fashioned way.
So around like 1:30 is, I called him and his phone was off.
No one knows why Damien's phone was turned off, but video surveillance shows that from 1:33 to 1:36 a.m., the wrestler was at City Market gas station. He used his debit card to purchase $25.02 worth of fuel. That was about half a tank of gas, which is the same amount of fuel that was in Damien's SUV when police found it 4 days later. Morgan Lambert told Detective Danos that Damien's gas purchase that night stood out to her as well.
It just doesn't make sense for him to go like fill up his car right before people like last saw him, and it just, it's weird.
Well, you're right, and we're hoping to put that together.
But police never did put Damien's late-night gas purchase together with anything in this case. To me, the idea of going to put gas in your car at 1:30 in the morning has always seemed like a response to an invitation. And the fact that Damien seemed like he was going to sleep at 1:15 a.m. makes me think that something, or someone, gave him a reason to wake up and leave the house. While we know he didn't drive very far, it's disputed whether or not Damien returned to the wrestling house after getting gas. And considering we're only talking about a matter of 15 minutes, it's never actually been clear if the gas trip was before or after Tori Boyle sees Damien lying on the floor with a blanket over his head in Andrew Morris's bedroom. No one knew about the gas station video of Damien until after he was found dead. And before that happened, there were multiple people who reported Damien was asleep at the wrestler's house at 2 a.m. But once Damien's body was found, everyone seemed to fall in line and say they never saw Damien after 1:30 a.m. It's a discrepancy that has always stood out to me. On the one hand, I can see how there's an innocent explanation. It's a party. No one is really looking at the time all that much. And so they estimate the best they can remember. And when records come back that seem to establish a clearer timeline, witnesses use that to aid their statements. But considering we are talking about an unexplained death investigation, the timing is pretty important. Here again is wrestling captain Kyle Pyatt.
And we kind of got into it, and nothing physical. Damien's one of my better friends, but we kind of yelled at each other, pretty pissed off at each other. And then I went on a walk, and that some people said he left too. And then they said they seen him afterwards. He was at the house for a little bit longer.
Who are these people that say Damien left after his fight with Kyle? The cops don't ask, and Kyle doesn't offer it up. But combing through police records, I found a witness whose statement lined up with Kyle's. Henry Gaudian, a former member of the cross-country team at Western, spoke to Detective Grace Cowan on July 9, 2014, 3 months after Damien's death. Henry remembered Damien and Kyle Pyatt getting into an argument at the party, and then, Henry says, Damien just disappeared for a while.
After him and Kyle got in a little argument and he pushed him up against the wall, what happened after that?
Damien kind of just like, that happened, and then like, he just kind of like went somewhere else. He was missing. I didn't see him. Like, that happened, and then like, he was around for a little bit, then he was gone, and then he reappeared again, like around anywhere from between 11 and 12. That's what I remember.
Like many of the partygoers, Henry's times are not very reliable when checked against records such as cell phones and surveillance videos. For example, Henry estimates the fight between Damien and Anthony took place as early as 10 p.m., when we know it actually happened around 11 p.m. This is important because the only time we know for sure that Damien left the wrestler's house was to get gas at 1:30 a.m. at City Market. Interestingly enough, 1:30 is a time that continues to come up in interviews as a marking point, and not just for Damien.
Yo, next round is about to start. You ready?
Yeah, just shopping for a car in Carvana.
For real?
Yeah, Carvana makes it super convenient to shop whenever, wherever.
For real? That's a ton of car options.
Yep, and these are all within my price range.
For really real? You can afford that?
Yeah, with Carvana. And boom, just like that, I'm getting it delivered in a couple days.
For really, really real? You just bought a car.
For real, and you just lost my turn.
Visit Carvana.com to shop for thousands of vehicles under $20,000.
This is wrestler Zach Schenk.
And that's when Courtney had walked in. So, and she told me that was like 1:30. And Kyle was on the couch next to us.
Here's Courtney Birch talking to Detective Danos.
What time do you think you went to bed?
If I got home around 1:30-ish, 1:45, I probably went to bed around 2:30-ish.
And what did Kyle do when you went to bed?
I'm assuming he went to bed as well.
Where was he when you went to bed?
He was getting up as well. He was walking to his room when I got up, so
okay.
That's my impression, is he just went to bed.
In both of his interviews with detectives, Kyle said after his confrontation with Damien, he went on a walk to cool off and then went to another party at Mountaineer Village apartment complex, and he didn't come home until 3 a.m.
And I came back and I seen him when I came back, and I was still kind of upset with him, so I went to a football party. And when I came back, I didn't see him. And the house was empty and there's no one there except for a couple guys sleeping on our couch.
Okay. And what time approximate do you think?
I got home about 3.
Detective Danos picks up on the time difference and presses Kyle on his memory.
Were you ever sitting in that room that Anderson was off of, sitting on the couch talking with Courtney?
Talking to Courtney that night,
mm-hmm.
Later when I got back home.
The reason I ask, some of the people I've talked with since then have this memory of going back to talk to Damien in Andrew's room and seeing you sitting on the couch talking to Courtney. Because I'm talking 1:15 is the time given to me that he's in Andrew's room, okay. Laying on the floor. Which, I know you guys, I mean, it's a party.
Yeah.
I'm not overly concerned. I just need to kind of... When I get confused, I need to kind of make sense out of it. It doesn't mean I'm saying you guys are lying to me or anything. I'm just trying to make sense of why the times are off.
Well, I just, like, honestly, I was pretty intoxicated that night. I'd been drinking quite a bit. And, I mean, I really, with time, I don't know, but I do know that I saw Damien. After me and Damien fought, I went on a walk, and it wasn't a very long walk. I walked down to Sonic and then walked back. And that was about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and came back, and he was back in the living room,
okay.
Hanging out with everybody.
That 15 to 20-minute time frame would be about the right amount of time for Damien to walk to his dorm room, pick up his car, get gas, and return to the wrestler's house. Both Kyle and Henry Gaudian remember a brief period of time when Damien was missing from the house and then returned. Kyle says when he saw Damien back at the house, he decided to leave again.
So you went to the football party. Where was that football party at?
This is in Mountaineer.
Do you remember what apartment they're in over there at Mountaineer?
I don't know the number. I just know where it's at.
And you were with them until 3 in the morning?
I was over there.
Okay. And I'm grabbing stuff like that so I can go back and say, yeah, okay, he was over here with him until 3 in the morning. And not because I'm trying to give you an alibi or anything, but I need to account for everybody's whereabouts.
I talked to Detective Danos in 2015 about the idea that Kyle attended a football party on Saturday night. Danos told me he was never able to verify that claim, but didn't believe it was relevant to the death investigation. We know the track party also took place at Mountaineer Village, a popular student apartment complex where lots of athletes lived. It was within walking distance of the wrestler's house. From police interviews, it was obvious that people were going back and forth between different parties that night. One of those party hoppers was Stefano Ballesteros.
We ended up just spending most of the night with them at this party with the cross-country team.
Stefano describes the scene at the track party after Damien's fight with Anthony as heated. And he specifically mentioned Anthony being upset.
He was pretty upset. And, you know, my first reaction was, I don't want this to turn into a cross-country and track versus wrestlers kind of thing. So I just told him what happened, that they talked to Damien, that they were pretty upset, that they called him out on that, that even the wrestlers agreed that that was complete bullshit and that he shouldn't be doing that. You know, I just told him that he was, that back at the party, Damien was making a big deal out of it, and he was called out by the wrestling team, so that he shouldn't really make a big deal out of it, that they took care of it internally.
Detective Grace Cowan asks Stefano where the track party took place.
Where was that?
That was in Mountaineer Village. I do not recall the exact number of the apartment.
The detective didn't press the issue. I wanted to find out the exact location of the track party at Mountaineer Apartment Complex, but it wasn't listed in the police report. However, I did find some clues. This is cross-country runner Tyler Gates talking to Detective Grace Cowan.
Do you know whose house that was?
The track house?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's some of the pole vaulters.
Using a copy of the 2014 track and field roster at Western State, I looked up former addresses for all the pole vaulters. And what may be a coincidence or a connection to the case, I learned that a senior pole vaulter named Luke Arnold lived in Unit 2303 at Mountaineer Village. That's just one unit away from where Damien bought acid from Curtis Markham, in Unit 2304. We know that Damien went to Curtis's apartment multiple times on Saturday night. Did he realize the track party was going on next door? And could he have stopped by after getting gas to finish the fight?
So you think they were also having a party at the same time the wrestling?
Yeah. I just know there was a track party and a wrestling party.
The very next day after talking with Tyler Gates, police tracked down a new wrestler for an interview.
This is Detective Cowan, interview with Francisco Marquez.
Francisco told Detective Cowan that although he didn't witness the fight between Damien and Anthony, he did see the altercation afterward with Damien, Kyle Pyatt, and Zach Schenck.
Kyle Pyatt came up to him and was like, he said, what do you think you're doing? And then they're just like really yelling at each other, and then they're trying to separate him. Zach Schenck grabbed Damien and took him to the back, and then they calmed down Pyatt. Damien came back out, and he was calmed down.
Francisco was concerned about the impact Damien's fight with a track athlete would have on the wrestling team's reputation.
I was like, love's a crazy thing, makes you do stupid stuff, but you gotta understand that there's a kid out there now that's talking crap about our team, and there's like, there's consequences for every action you do, man.
Francisco says around midnight, he saw a verbal confrontation between Damien and Kyle Pyatt that spilled into another room and ended a few minutes later with everyone coming back out. Detective Grace Cowan picks up on this and asks Francisco an interesting follow-up question.
Oh, question I had. Did you ever see him leave and then come back?
The idea that Damien left the party undetected is well-founded. In fact, no one reports seeing Damien leave the wrestler's house that night. And if it wasn't for the City Market gas station video, we wouldn't even have proof when Damien left the wrestler's house. The last place at the party where Damien was seen was Andrew Morris's bedroom around 1:15 a.m. If Damien had left the house through the front door, he likely would have been spotted by someone. After all, there was a group of people sitting on the couches in the living room, including Courtney Birch, Kyle Pyatt, and Zach Schenck. But there was another way out of the house, a so-called secret door. This is Damien's friend and neighbor, Jessica De Aquila.
When I left, I didn't go back out the front door. There's a secret way out the back. They could go through the neighbor's yard back to my house.
Now, which exit is the secret way?
It's just out the back room.
Is there a door there?
Uh-huh. And that was Andrew's, Morris's room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so was that Andrew's room that had that door?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the last place at the wrestler's house where Damien was seen just happens to be the one room with a secret exit. And if that's not enough evidence that Damien left the house undetected, there's also the fact that he was wearing Andrew's camouflage hooded sweatshirt in the gas station video. And if Damien left undetected, it stands to reason that he could have also returned undetected through the same secret door and in the same camouflage clothing. In the early stages of the investigation, there were multiple reports of Damien being at the house after 1:30 a.m. In Episode 3, Jessica De Aquila relayed to police that Damien was asleep at the wrestler's house at 2 a.m., and Gary Hurd said he got the same information from Devin Zavala. Here again is wrestler Francisco Marquez talking to Detective Cowan on May 8th, 1 month after Damien's death.
Because what I heard was that someone, they woke up to him in the morning on the couch. That's what I heard. And then he left. So,
like, woke up at like 7?
At Pyatt's, yeah, like around 7, someone woke up and saw him on the couch and then went back to bed.
Do you know who?
No, I honestly cannot remember who that was. I just remember hearing that they woke up and they saw him on the couch sleeping, and then they woke up again and he was gone.
As it turns out, Detective Cowan heard that Francisco was the one with Damien around 4 a.m. at the wrestler's house.
All right, so last time you saw him was about 12 a.m.?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, for some reason there was people saying that you had seen him at like 4 in the morning.
That's what I, when I talked to the other investigator, that's what she said too. So I was like, no. I was like, I went home, went to bed.
Detective Cowan didn't say who had told her that Damien was still at the wrestler's house at 4 a.m., but it had to have been someone she spoke to before Francisco's interview on the afternoon of May 8th. Based on police records, that leaves 11 possible sources, at least from recorded interviews. Now, let's check the tape.
Detective Cowan interview with Lacey Miller at 7:58 a.m. on the 8th of May.
As we've already discussed, Lacey was one of the last people known to communicate with Damien. Lacey didn't attend the party at the wrestler's house, but she was curious about what happened there and how it might have impacted Damien's plans that night.
When I found out he died, I started talking to some of his friends and started getting close to one of his friends and who was there. And his name's Chris.
Chris Nieto was also a member of the wrestling team at Western State.
At first, he was just saying that it was just a regular fight between this kid and Damien. It was a fight outside in Kyle Pyatt's yard. Kyle and Damien started arguing. Then Chris and this other kid, Zach Shank, broke it up. They just took Damien to the laundry room just to calm them down and just put Damien to sleep, and that was it.
We discussed the possible significance of the phrase, put Damien to sleep, in episode 6. So let's listen to the other story Lacey heard about Damien's schedule that night. One that extends his timeline at the wrestler's house until 4 a.m., 3 hours after he is seen getting gas at City Market.
So the rumor is that he was with another kid until 4 o'clock in the morning. Damien went to go fill up his car. And he ended up going back to the party after he filled up the car. And then he was with another wrestler until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Did he say who the other wrestler was?
Yeah, his name's Franny. His first name's like Francisco, though, so.
Okay.
But yeah, he's on the wrestling team.
People were asking me, where's Damien? I was like, I don't know. I know I'm one of his friends, but I'm not. Yeah. I'm not a babysitter. And then people kept asking me, and I was like, okay.
To this day, authorities have never reconciled statements from witnesses who said Damien returned to the wrestler's house after getting gas. Police never interviewed Chris Nieto, the source of the rumor that Lacey Miller reported about Damien being with the wrestlers until 4 a.m. Chris declined my offer to be interviewed for this podcast, but someone did talk to him on the record, a private investigator hired by Damien's family in May 2014. According to the written report, Chris Nieto said he left the wrestler's house between 12:30 and 1 a.m. Chris also said that he talked to Francisco Marquez, who reported being with Damien until 4 a.m., watching TV at the wrestler's house. This is the same timing provided by Lacey Miller. I wanted to talk to Francisco Marquez myself, to see what he remembered about that night, and to ask him why two people thought he was with Damien until 4 a.m. on the last night of his life. Francisco Marquez did not respond to my request for an interview. If you are listening to this podcast, Franny, my offer to speak with you still stands. What's so confounding about this case is that there are 12 key hours where Damien is unaccounted for. Between 1:36 a.m. on Sunday, March 30th, when we see him leaving the City Market service station, and 1 p.m., when his body was first spotted by Linda Nienhauser at Cabin Creek.
For some reason, just glanced to the right of where the road was going, and on that ridge there, I thought I saw, well, I know I saw, it looked like a person standing up, camouflage jacket, you know, and I thought this person was looking my direction, and I thought I saw another individual squatted down to the right of that.
Around 1 p.m. on Sunday, March 30th, Linda Nienhauser sees Damien's body on a ridge, as well as a second person squatting down nearby. Parked outside the gate, she sees a black SUV and a white truck. Linda also describes two bicycles locked to the post and fresh tracks in the snow in the area beyond the gate.
We're trying to identify the person in the white truck.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to see it again in town, would you let me know?
You know, I've actually been looking for it.
The owner of the white truck and the identities of the two bicycle riders are still unknown. Everyone in the case, including Gunnison police, agree that the black SUV was Damien's, and the body that Linda described was that of the freshman wrestler. There are no other reported sightings of Damien's body or his car on Sunday. On Monday, March 31st, at 7:40 a.m., Damien's dad, Gary Hurd, sent his son a desperate Facebook message.
I was pretty panicked at that point, having not heard from him after trying so many times.
Could you open up your Facebook account and look at your sent messages and take a screenshot of the message that you sent Damien, if it's still in there?
Yeah, I guess Facebook Messenger keeps everything, too. I mean, it won't fall off or anything, I don't think.
I don't think so.
Gary scrolled through years of Facebook messages until he got to the spring of 2014.
There it is. March 31st is on the Senate.
Could you read it to me, if you don't mind?
Sure. It says, "Hey, everything okay? I've been trying to reach you since 3 yesterday. Let me know you're okay."
Facebook messages have like a read receipt. Does it say that the message was read?
Nope.
But it has a check mark that it was sent.
Yes, correct.
Okay. When you got into his Facebook account and you went into his Messenger inbox, you didn't see this message?
No, it was not there.
It's just interesting trying to think about how that message wouldn't be in his Messenger inbox unless somebody deleted it. If it says that it was sent and it has the check mark, it would have been delivered, you know, even if his phone's off,
yeah,
and,
right.
You know?
Sure.
Based on the timeline, we know Damien didn't delete that Facebook message from his dad. He was already dead. And as we covered in episode 6, Gunnison resident Matt Marvel went to Cabin Creek around 10 a.m. on Monday and did not report seeing Damien's SUV. Interestingly, also on Monday morning at 10 a.m., someone reportedly signed Damien into his chemistry class at Western, used his ID card in the cafeteria around 11 a.m., and signed into his 1 p.m. politics class. It should be noted that Damien's car keys were attached to his student ID, so if someone was driving Damien's car, they would have also had his Western ID card in their possession.
Is it possible he would lend out his meal card to somebody?
See, that's what, like, people were telling me that people were swiping his meal card,
mm-hmm.
but that would be on his car keys, so no way. There'd be okay. No way.
When Gunnison police interviewed wrestler Devin Zavala, they had not yet received information about Damien's car being moved on Monday. The next big marker in the Monday timeline comes from wrestlers Travis Bradford and Colin McNally. They reported seeing Damien's Saturn SUV traveling at a high rate of speed with a crooked license plate out of Gunnison and toward the scene at Cabin Creek. Colin said this took place between 5 and 6 p.m. while they ate dinner at Subway after lifting weights. Unfortunately, none of these dots were connected at the time, and all Gary Heard knew for certain was that Damien hadn't answered his phone calls or texts in 3 days.
By the end of Monday, I 100% knew that something was wrong. I tried to get as many people as I could up there to go out and start looking for his car, asking questions. I started talking to the school more as far as was he in classes, things like that.
At 12:53 p.m. on Tuesday, April 1st, 2014, Gary Heard called the Gunnison Police Department to request a welfare check on his son, Damien.
I didn't know exactly what happened, but I knew that something was wrong. I'll call it father's intuition.
That marked the beginning of the police investigation into Damien's disappearance. Damien's time as an officially missing person lasted only 1 day. His body was found at 9:58 a.m. on Wednesday, April 2nd, by a Gunnison County Sheriff's deputy. It would be the beginning of a long and complicated death investigation that would span 3 agencies, 47 witnesses, and eventually 2 arrests. But more on that later this season. If you know anything about the Damien Heard case, contact us securely at finaldaysonearth.com. On the next episode of Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Heard.
After we've spoken to you, realize Damien's not here anymore. What do you think happened?
I don't know. It's just so hard to believe with all the rumors going on.
We'll explore new theories, sightings, and stories that surfaced after Damien's disappearance.
Well, I've heard some of the questions you've been asking the other boys, which is making me think it wasn't an accident.
Like, why would he even be out there in the first place, then, if that's what I think?
Did you guys ever go east of town to do anything?
No. No.
Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One and Live by Live. Each episode is written, reported, and produced by me, Claire Sanimal. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Songs licensed from premiumbeat.com are Bending Truth and A Thin Line. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of lucymedia.com. Additional production help from Amber Robinson, Janice Sue, and Elise Weber. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanimal. Special thanks to Bryce Bassinger and Gary Heard for talking to me in this episode. Tune in next week as we continue our search to understand what happened to Damien Heard and who, if anyone, is responsible.